Shir, today, for biographies of great Rabbanim, we will discuss the period from 1932 and on, but before we do that, I'm going to spend just a few minutes in discussing the great Polish Hasidim. So we find that Rabbi Chaim of Sanz, known as Rabbi Chaim Halberstam, was a towering figure in Torah scholarship and is influence on the Hasidic movement in his own and future generations, in his incredible generosity and in his personal humility. He was not born to a Hasidic family and did not become an adherent of the movement until, already an accomplished and respected scholar, he became a disciple of Rav Natoli of Rupshitz. In 1830, at the age of 37, he became the Rabbi of Sanz in Galicia, where he remained for the rest of his life. The Sanz Rav was one of the most revered rebbes of his generation. Even a man as great as the Darchei Tshuva Munkach used to come to him for blessings. Hasidim of the time related that it was thanks to the Sanz Rav's blessing that the Darchei Tshuva had children who survived infancy. He was so highly regarded as an expert in halacha that hundreds of rabbis sent him their questions and he responded. His responses are collected in several volumes of Divrei Chaim and are still regarded as classics of the generation. His love of fellow Jews was extraordinary. He himself lived in poverty because he gave away everything he received from the countless people who came to him for advice and blessings. He even borrowed money to give to the poor. In response to his children who complained that he should not go into debt to give charity, he said, "Whoever heard of children who would deny their father the only mitzvah that he has?" The Divrei Chaim spawned many prominent Hasidic dynasties which spread his teachings. Most of them, tragically, were victims of the Holocaust, but his legacy still lives on brightly, since his surviving descendants re-established their movements from scratch, among them Avivah Klausenberg and many others that are not as well known. Let's talk about the Yunuka of Stolen. In 1870, when Rabbi Yisrael Perlo, the future Rebbe of Stolen Karlin, was born, his grandfather Baron was the Rebbe and his father. Rabbi Usher was a young man with the promise of a bright future. When the infant Yisrael was only 3 years old, his grandfather and then his father died. Thousands of stolen Karlin Hasidim were orphaned of their leaders. It seemed as if an end had come to the Hasidic dynasty that had begun with Rabbi Aaron of Karlin, one of the illustrious disciples of the Maggid of Meshritz. The senior Hasidim then made a risky decision. They accepted the 3-year-old Yisrael as their leader. Not surprisingly, he was called the Yanuka, the child, a name that remained with him all of his life. Although he played like other children, he was different. He studied intensely and even then gained respect for his sage advice. The great Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector once visited Stolen and after spending 2 hours with the 12-year-old Yanuka, described him as a gon. When he was 52 years old, he traveled to Frankfurt for medical treatment and it was there that he died. He had left a will in which he stated that there should be no eulogies at his funeral and that he should be buried in the city where he died. Thus it was that he was buried in Frankfurt, and the stolen Karlin Hasidim referred to him as the Frankfurter. His 6 sons carried on his tradition of Torah and Hasidus. 4 of them were killed in the Holocaust. His son Rabbi Yaakov Chaim settled in Brooklyn before the war. His son Rabbi Yochanan survived despite terrible deprivation and reignited the movement in Yerushalayim and America. It is now led by Yanuka's great-grandson, Reb Baruch Shochet, the stolen Karlin Rebbe who resides in Givat Zev, near Yerushalayim. Now let's talk about the Majusim. To a Chassid, the name Majusim brings to mind beautiful music, music as it may even be sung by the angels. Rabbi Yisrael Traub, the first Rebbe of Majusim, Poland, was famous for his complex classical Hasidic melodies. It is said that Rabbi Yisrael once underwent surgery and refused any anesthesia. He overcame the terrible pain of the operation by concentrating on composing and singing a very long and beautiful song known as Eskere, to the words of a stanza from the Yom Kippur and the Ilu service. Through his music and Torah teachings, he touched the souls of thousands who were attracted to his court and to stronger religious observance. Many Jews who had abandoned Jewish practice were inspired by his melodies and returned to traditional Judaism. His tradition of Talmudic scholarship, Hasidic discourses, and exceptional music was carried on by his successors. The Majlis at court and yeshiva moved to New York, Tel Aviv, and finally Bnei Brak after the war. Let's talk about Reb Chaim Elozer Shapiro Munkach. Reb Chaim Elozer Shapiro succeeded his father's Rabbi Munkach at age of 41. In 1913, and led with a combination of strength and compassion, he had been his father's student as well as companion and confidant. In addition, he edited and published the final volume of his father's monumental work, Darche Tshuva. Once he assumed his father's mantle, he revealed extraordinary powers of leadership. He threw himself into community affairs and showed his mettle when World War I broke out. Thousands of refugees poured into Munkach, and when the invading Russian army drew near to the city, the Rebbe stilled the panic of his followers by assuring them that the city would not become a battlefield. So it was, the advancing army stopped at the approach to the city and never went further. Despite his heavy responsibilities, the Munkach Rebbe wrote over 20 volumes, including the four-volume responsa called Minchas Eluzer, by which he became known. He established a yeshiva where he himself taught and which attracted hundreds of students from several countries. He loved Eretz Yisrael with a passion and had a special affection for people who lived there. Nevertheless, he was a strong and outspoken opponent of secular Zionism. In 1930, he filled a long-time goal when he traveled to Eretz Yisrael to visit Rabbi Shlomo Eliezer Alfandri, the Sephardic sage known as the Saba Kadisha, the Holy Elder. At that time, the Saba Kadisha was 112 years old, and his mind and memory were as sharp as ever. They discussed matters of Halacha and Kabbalah, and at the end of their last meeting, the Saba Kadisha died, the Minchas Eluzer tore his clothes and wept bitterly. He was sickly for much of his life and asked that on his tombstone should be inscribed, "He studied Torah despite suffering." Munkach Hasidus continues to thrive today under the leadership of the Munkach Elozer's grandson, Reb Moshe Leib Rabinowitz of Brooklyn, New York. Let's go to 1932. Reb Yosef Soloveitchik arrives in America. Born in Pruszyn, Poland, a grandchild of Chaim of Brisk, Reb Yosef B. Soloveitchik became the spiritual leader of American modern Orthodoxy and was known to many thousands of his students and followers simply as the Rav. As a child, Rabbi Soloveitchik studied Torah in Cheder and later with his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, the son of Rabbi Chaim of Brisk. At the age of 23, he enrolled in the University of Berlin, where he received a doctorate in philosophy. When he arrived in the United States in 1932, he became the head of Boston's Council of Orthodox Synagogues, the Vad Ha'ir. In Boston, he greatly improved the quality and standards of kosher supervision and founded the Maimonides Day School. He succeeded his father as the senior Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan in 1941. Rav Soloveitchik's lectures stressed the Brisker approach. His classes, which could take 3 hours or more, were both absorbing and popular, often attracting more than 100 students. His annual public lectures in memory of his father and on repentance attracted over 1,000 people who had listened to Rabbi Soloveitchik for over 4 hours. Many of his students became rabbis and community leaders throughout the world. Few of his works were published during his lifetime, but many of his writings and books based on recordings and notes of his lectures continued to be published, bringing Rabbi Soloveitchik's teachings to an ever-widening audience. He passed away in Chol HaMoed Pesach in 1993. Now, what's interesting to know is that in 1959, Rabbi Soloveitchik was offered the position of Chief Rabbi of Israel, but he did not accept. Also, from 1946 and onwards, Rabbi Soloveitchik was the honorary president of Religious Zionist of America. Let's talk about the famous Baba Sali. In 1921, the Baba Sali visits Israel because some people visiting the ancient synagogue of the Rizal and Sfas had died mysteriously. It was decided to close the site to visitors. The shul stayed closed for a number of years until Baba Sali visited Israel. He insisted upon praying and eating in the shul, and when he exited unharmed, he left the people's Sfat know that it was now safe to enter. Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera, known as the Baba Sali, which means honorable grandfather, was born in Morocco. He was a genius in Talmud and Halacha. He was also a Kabbalist, deeply versed in the mystical secrets of the Torah, and a moral shochet and a sofer. He was a saintly man who slept only 3 hours a night and prayed at sunrise. He moved to Eretz Yisrael and in 1970 decided to live in the Tivot, a small village in the Negev. Thousands from around the world sought his guidance, prayers, and blessings. So let's go over a few things about the Baba Sali. Baba Sali would study the Parsha from the Sefer Torah he had written himself. He once traveled 380 kilometers by railroad to get to a place where the moon was visible so that he could say Kiddush Levanim. When Rabbi Yisrael Avuchatzara visited the then 105-year-old Tzava Kadisha, which we mentioned just a few minutes ago, Rabbi Shlomo Eliezer Alfandri, the great sage of Yerushalayim, stood up for him. Baba Sali was only 32 years old at the time. Some interesting stories about the Baba Sali, his vision and blessings. A childless couple came to Baba Sali asking for help. He told them to remove the impure books from their home. They went home, searched their bookshelves, and couldn't find anything that would be classified as impure. They returned to Baba Sali and told them to look again. They finally found what Baba Sali had seen. In an attic corner, the previous tenants had left a copy of the New Testament. They removed it and not long afterwards celebrated the birth of their child. In 1970, terrorists hijacked a plane load of travelers, holding them as hostages and threatening to blow up the plane. Baba Sali entered his room to pray for the hostages' safety. Some time later, he came out and said, "Everything is all right. The hostages are safe." Soon the radio announced that the hostages had been freed at the exact moment that Baba Sali had finished his prayers. Baba Sali once rejected a gift of fresh vegetables, claiming them unfit to be eaten. After investigation, it was discovered that the vegetables had been picked on the Shabbos. Another story is, after 4 years of treatment, the doctors told an invalid there was no hope for her to ever walk again. She came to the Baba Sali for a blessing. Baba Sali gave her water to rub on her legs. She came to him not long afterwards for another visit. This time she was walking. Her doctors, amazed by the miracle, came with her to ask for the Baba Sali's blessing as well. Let's go to 1941. Rav Aaron Cutler arrives in America. Rav Aaron Cutler, Rosh Yeshiva of Kletsk, Poland, arrived in America as a refugee from Hitler's Europe. He had two burning ambitions: to save Jews from the Nazis and to re-establish Torah study and Jewish life in America. With dedication and courage, he assisted the Vatat Hatzolim, a New York-based organization that worked tirelessly to save Jews from the Holocaust. At the same time, he planned on building a new kind of yeshiva in America, one where students pursued Torah study not in order to become professional rabbis or clergymen, but simply the shmo for his own sake. He would be a yeshiva like those that existed in Europe. Everyone told him it could not be done. "Rabbi, this is America," they said. "Money is valued, the dollar is king, not idealism or spiritual values. Your dreams are for Europe." These people underestimated Rabbi Aaron. He would not compromise. They also underestimated the potential of American Jews. Rabbi Aaron was a man of great personal warmth. He also had awe-inspiring charisma and unlimited perseverance. Rav Meir Simcha Divinsk, known as the Or Sameach, said that Rav Aaron was the greatest genius to be born in 40 years. As Reb Aaron grew older, the Chofetz Chaim recognized his potential to become a Gadol Dor. Reb Aaron studied in Slabodka and founded a yeshiva in Klesk, which had over 200 students before World War II. He escaped the Holocaust by fleeing to Japan via Russia, and from there he came to the United States. In America, Reb Aaron became the leading figure of many Torah organizations, including Torah Mesorah, a national Jewish education network, and Agudas Israel, a Jewish community activist organization. He was chairman of the Moatzei's Gedolei HaTorah Council of Torah Sages of Agudas Israel. In addition, he was very active in Chinuch HaSmori, the independent Orthodox school network in Israel. He also played an active role in guiding Jewish communities around the world. Rav Aaron's crowning achievement was Beis Medrash Gevura, the yeshiva for advanced Torah that he established in Lakewood, New Jersey. It was a yeshiva where students studied Torah exclusively. Over the years, the yeshiva in Lakewood became by far the largest advanced yeshiva in America. Lakewood's example inspired other institutions to emulate Rav Aaron's goals. After only two decades in America, his influence had transformed the American horizon. By then, the country was home to many yeshivas devoted to studying Torah Lishma. Rav Aaron had defied the predictions. He had done the impossible. So let's talk about now the post-Holocaust Hasidic courts. Most of the great and lesser-known Hasidic courts were wiped out in the almost total destruction of Eastern European Jewry, but a handful of leaders survived and recreated the world that was. As a result, Hasidus in its many forms is flourishing in many countries. Although most of the names of the past are being forgotten, many of the surviving and growing movements, such as the dynasties of Munkach and Stolen Karlin, have been mentioned before in connection with their forebears. A few of the others are mentioned now. Bells. Rav Aaron Rokeach, the Belzer Rav, was so renowned as a righteous man, far removed from the pleasures and mundane concerns of this world, that his vast knowledge of Torah was overshadowed. He succeeded his illustrious father, Rav Yisrocha Dov, as Rebbe of Belz in Galicia in 1927, and became the spiritual guide to tens of thousands of people. During the Holocaust, the Belzer Rav was a prime target of the Nazis, but with the aid of his loyal Hasidim and many others who revered his greatness, he was able to elude his pursuers, moving from ghetto to ghetto. The Germans caught his son and heir apparent, however, and threw him into a crowded shul, which they set on fire. When the Rebbe heard about it, he said it was his Akedah. Ultimately, a high-ranking Hungarian officer was bribed to smuggle the Rebbe and his brother, the Rebbe of Bilgari, into Hungary. Eyewitnesses testified to a series of miracles during the harrowing trip. From Hungary, he came to Eretz Yisrael in 1944. In the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael, the Rebbe immediately undertook to rebuild, and multitudes gathered around him. He resided in Yerushalayim. He built a yeshiva in Tel Aviv and later in Yerushalayim. The Rebbe lived almost eating very little and sprinkling salt on his food, but he did everything possible to lighten burdens of his followers. He passed away without any children, and his young nephew, Rabbi Socher Dov, the son of the Bilgarir Rebbe, was chosen to become the Belzer Rebbe. Under his leadership, the movement is growing vigorously. Let's talk about the Bavev dynasty. Bavev was a major Hasidic movement in Galicia with a network of yeshivas. The pre-war Bavev Rav, Reb Benzion Halberstam, was captured by the Nazis, forced to dig his own grave, and murdered. His son, Rav Shlomo, survived the Holocaust and came to the United States. At first, he had difficulty even having a minion, but with a dedication to Torah and Hasidus, charisma, and an unexcelled love for Jews, he attracted a very large and devoted following. Bavev today is the largest Hasidic community in Borough Park and has branches in cities throughout the world. Like its forerunners in Galicia, the Bavev Rav built yeshivas and girls' schools. The Bavev Rav would not permit himself to be drawn into controversies. His Ahavas Yisrael, love of fellow Jews, was legendary, and he transmitted it to his Hasidim. Kindness, dedication to Jewish education, and joy in the service of Hashem were his hallmarks. He passed away in 2000 and was succeeded by his son, Rav Naftali. Let's talk about the Ger. The Ger Rebbes were giants of Hasidus and Torah scholarship. They are known by the names of the Sforim they wrote. The first Ger Rebbe was the Chiddush Yerim, and there's a separate shiur online about the life of the Chiddush Yerim. His grandson and successor was Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Alter, known as the Sfas Emes, and his son, the Imre Emes, succeeded him. The Ger Rebbes had hundreds of thousands of Hasidim throughout Poland. Miraculously, the Imre Emes, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai Alter, escaped the Gestapo and arrived in Eretz Israel, where he re-established today's thriving Gerer community. He was succeeded by his sons Rav Yisrael, Rav Simcha Bunim, and Rav Pinchas Menachem. Today's Gerer Rebbe is Rav Yaakov, the son of Rav Simcha Bunim. Gerer was always distinguished for its emphasis on intense Torah study, not only in its many yeshivas, but also as the lifelong pursuit of every Jew. Historically, although Rav Meir Shapiro introduced the Daf Yomi concept, it was the Imre Emes who made it a mass movement when he publicly began its study. As a result, many thousands of Hasidim followed suit. The Klausenberg Rebbe, Rabbi Ksil Yehuda Halberstam, lived through the Holocaust despite great suffering in slave labor camps, but his wife and 11 children did not. Despite his personal tragedy, the Rebbe was the main source of encouragement for his fellow imitated survivors in the displaced persons camp after the war. Settling in the United States, he remarried and built a thriving community in a new family in Williamsburg. Later, he established his community in Union City, New Jersey. The Rebbe ultimately settled in the Tanya Israel, where he continued his work of caring for the Jewish people. During the war, when the Rebbe was on the verge of death with no basic medical care available, he prayed to Hashem, promising that if he survived, he would provide medical care for Jews. Among his many achievements, the Rebbe built the famous Lanyado Hospital in Netanya. The hospital strictly follows Jewish law and is recognized as one of Israel's finest institutions. Let's talk about the Rujin. Rabbi Yisrael of Rujin was one of the great leaders of his time, and his sons and sons-in-laws were Rebbes in their own right. Of the family dynasties that survived the Holocaust, the most prominent are Sadegera and Boryan. The Sadegera Rebbe, Rabbi Avraham Yaakov, settled in Eretz Israel in 1938. His son succeeded him and maintained centers in Yerushalayim and in Tel Aviv. The Biyana Rebbe, Rabbi Mordechai Shlomo Friedman, settled on the Lower East Side of New York in 1933 and immediately became recognized as a wise and holy man. He passed away in 1971. He was succeeded by his grandson, Rabbi Nochum Breyer, who lives in Yerushalayim, where he leads a large and growing Bayanas shul in a very highly regarded yeshiva. Both Sadegera and Boyan have been distinguished for generations for their dignity, generosity, sensitivity, and promotion of Torah study. Let's talk about the Sapna Rebbe. A miraculous survivor of the notorious Bergen-Belsen death camp, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, had been the Rav of Sapna, Romania, before the war. After the war, he established his Hasidic center in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Within a few decades, he and his followers had built a huge Satma neighborhood there with yeshivas, shuls, shops, its own emergency ambulance service, a matzah bakery, and more. Sometime later, the Satma Hasidim established an independent village called Kiryas Yoel near Monroe in upstate New York. The Satma's Bikur Cholim Society is famous throughout New York for its many activities to aid all Jews in need of help, without regard to their background or affiliation. The Satmar Rav was a very great scholar who learned virtually the entire day. His personal generosity was boundless, and he communicated this straight to his Hasidim. Did you know that the Satmar Rebbe was a pious man who represented the great Hasidic Rebbes of Europe to American Jews? The Rebbe studied Torah day and night for 40 years, starting from his bar mitzvah. He did not lie down on the bed to sleep, except for Friday nights. He spent many hours a day helping his numerous visitors, giving them encouragement, advice, and financial help. Thousands came to receive his blessings, which were known to be very powerful. Upon his passing in 1979, 100,000 people Hasidim, yeshiva students, European and American-born Jews came to pay homage to the Satmar Rebbe at his funeral. The Satmar Rebbe was opposed to the creation of the State of Israel. In addition to his objection to the fact that most of his leaders were anti-religious, he believed the Jews must wait for Mashiach before founding their own state. Let's talk about the Square Rebbe. Square was a small town in Ukraine. Its Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Yosef Tversky, came to the United States after the war and settled in Williamsburg. Although he did not have Hasidim who survived the Holocaust, he was soon recognized as a pious man and developed a large following. He pioneered the concept of establishing a Hasidic community where the inhabitants, especially children, would be sheltered from harmful influences. Thus, the city called New Square, a Hasidic village in upstate New York, was born. Beginning with just a few houses, New Square has blossomed into a large community. This concept was followed by other Hasidic groups. The present Rebbe, Reb David Tversky, is an inspirational leader of growing community and offers guidance and blessings to streams of people who come from near and far. Let's talk about the Vizhnitz dynasty. Rav Chaim Meir Hager, the Rebbe of Vizhnitz, came to America after the war and settled in Williamsburg. He was warm, charismatic, kind, and outgoing, the composer of many Hasidic melodies and an inspiring chazan. As a result, his community of Hasidim grew quite large, but his heart was in Eretz Yisrael. He settled there in 1950, leaving his youngest son, Reb Mordechai, to lead the Vizhnitz community in America. Reb Mordechai later established a community in Muncie, New York, known as Kesser. Reb Chaim Meir established Kiryas Vizhnitz in Bnei Brak, and he became a prime leader of Orthodox Jewry in Israel. When he passed away in 1972, his oldest son, Reb Moshe, assumed his mantle. The two brothers each have large communities of followers throughout the world, and they are both known as exceptional Torah scholars, distinguished for their diligence in study. Okay, let's talk about Lubavitcher Rebbe. Menachem Mendel Schneerson becomes Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1951. If you'd like to hear a shiur about his father-in-law, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson, there's a separate shiur online under biographies of great Rabbanim. So Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson became Rebbe Lubavitch following the death of his father-in-law, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson. Rabbi Menachem Mendel was a brilliant man. His charismatic personality and overpowering love for Jews of every background attracted thousands of visitors from all walks of life, from countries around the globe. Lubavitcher Rebbe developed a worldwide network of schools, shuls, adult education programs, and charitable institutions in hundreds of cities, as diverse as Rochester, New York, Sao Paulo, Brazil, and Kathmandu, Nepal. The Rebbe established Chabad houses in the four corners of the world. These were centers of Jewish outreach and Jewish community service. His efforts touched the lives of millions of Jews and caused tens of thousands to rediscover their Jewish heritage. His talks and Farbrengen get-together of Hasidim were the first Torah lectures to be international broadcast via satellite to large audiences. The Lubavitcher Rebbe passed away on the third day of Tammuz in 1994 and is buried in Queens, New York, near his father-in-law. Now, did you know that Israeli and taxi drivers, even non-religious ones, often hang the Lubavitcher Rebbe's picture in their vehicles? And during World War II, the Lubavitcher Rebbe worked as a marine engineer for the United States Navy on the secret military projects. And one of the largest seders in the world takes place in Thailand, where Chabad caters a seder for hundreds of Israeli tourists in the country. Let's talk about the Chazon Ish. Rav Avram Yeshaya Karlitz, who was the Chazon Ish, was born in Lithuania before the beginning of the 20th century. In 1920, he and his wife moved to Vilna. There he was close with Chaim Ozer Gorzinski, the acknowledged leader of pre-war European Jewry. With the help of the chief rabbi of Avram Isaac Cook, the Chazon Ish was granted papers that allowed him to be one of the few legal immigrants whom the British allowed into Palestine. He arrived in Eretz Israel in 1933 and settled in Bnei Brak, where he shared a small apartment with his brother-in-law, the Stipler Gaon. Chazon Ish became the unchallenged leader of Israel's Haredi Jewry. Thousands came to his home in Bnei Brak for his blessing and advice. He wrote many volumes of Chazon Ish, which is a penetrating commentary on the Talmud. His Emunah v'Betachon explores the concepts of belief and faith in Hashem. He published letters to present his rulings, advice, and guidance on a wide array of issues. The Chazon Ish taught that every facet of Jewish life must adhere strictly to the requirements of halacha. He took great pains to determine halachic requirements. With great genius, he revitalized the halachas taluyos or its laws dealing with agriculture in Eretz Israel. These laws had not been practiced for centuries because there had been hardly any Jewish farmers in Israel. He provided clear guidelines for the Jewish people after centuries of exile on how to once again properly perform the mitzvahs of terumas and maisras in Eretz Israel and how to properly observe the Shemitah sabbatical year. Though he never held a formal position as Rosh Yeshiva or Shul Rav, people from around the world from all walks of life and all levels of Torah observance sought his wisdom, counsel, guidance, blessing, and halachic direction. But I want to tell you now a story about the Ben-Gurion who meets the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak. A great conflict between the religious and non-religious sections of Israel society erupted over the drafting of women into the army. The great Torah leaders, including Chief Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, ruled that it was forbidden for women to serve in the army. To reach an accommodation with the Israeli religious community, Ben-Gurion went to Bnei Brak to meet with the great Torah sage Rabbi Avraham Yeshayahu Karlitz Chazon Ish. Ben-Gurion presented the state's manpower needs and explained why he felt women should be conscripted into the army. The Chazon Ish responded, "When two wagons, one empty and one full, must both pass through a narrow road, the empty wagon must move to the side and yield to the full one. Torah Judaism is a full wagon with thousands of years of history, heritage, and experience. The new state has not yet withstood the test of time. It's still an empty wagon. The empty wagon did indeed yield, and even today, religious women are not drafted into the Israeli army." Let's come to 1959. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein was given the name Moshe because he, like Moshe of the Torah, was born on the 7th of Adar. Rav Feinstein dedicated his life to teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael devotedly and unselfishly. As a youngster in his hometown of Uzdom, a suburb of the Russian city of Minsk, he was educated not in yeshiva but by his father and a private tutor. Shortly before reaching the age of bar mitzvah, he went to the yeshiva in Slutsk. From a young age, his brilliance and phenomenal memory were apparent. He knew the entire Talmud in all four sections of the Shulchan Aruch by the time he was 17 years old. Yet he never became haughty and proud. All his life he remained a man of the people, caring and considerate of others. His incredible concern extended to every human being. Even the non-Jewish hospital nurses who had cared for him and to whom he had shown appreciation and kindness broke down and cried when he passed away. Rav Moshe answered everyone's questions, from complex questions put to him by the great Rosh Yeshiva to those of the women in his neighborhood who called him on Friday afternoons to find out what time the Shabbos candles were to be lit. In Lublin, Russia, where Rav Moshe was Rav, the communist and evil Joseph Stalin were in power. With brutal force, the cruel Russian regime wanted to destroy all religious institutions, hoping to extinguish all religious belief and practice. Their goal was to create a purely theistic state whose citizens would not believe in religion or God. Rav Moshe resisted the official persecution and for 6 years remained in his post in Lublin. Despite harassment from government officials, he refused to resign. He was evicted from his home, taken from the house in the middle of the night, and interrogated. Yet while resisting the communists, he was able to trick them into building a mikveh for his community. Circumstances finally forced Rav Moshe
to leave Russia. He arrived in the United States in 1937 at the age of 41 and became Rosh Yeshiva in New York's Masifta Tiferes Yerushalayim, one of the oldest yeshivas in the United States. He expanded the yeshiva's programs and created its resident division, the Yeshiva of Staten Island, in 1966. And in 1962, with Avraham Kotler's passing, he became the chairman of the Motzei's Gedolei HaTorah, Agudas Yisrael's Council of Torah Sages. He was the leader of other national institutions as well. He worked tirelessly for the development and expansion of Torah Jew in America and throughout the world. Rav Moshe passed away on Tainus Esther at the age of 91 in the New York City Hospital. At the moment of his passing, miles away at the Yeshiva of Staten Island, the light over his chair and the Beis Medrash flickered and went out. His funeral in New York attracted well over 100,000 people. When his casket arrived in Yerushalayim for burial, Purim festivities were postponed as 250,000 people accompanied him to his final resting place in Har Menuchos. The large numbers that attended the funerals are not surprising when one considers that this was a man who, when once asked in what merit he had become so famous, responded, "All my life, I never hurt a human being." Correction: Rav Moshe Feinstein came to America in 1937 at the age of 41, not in 1959. With this, we have concluded our shiur for today for biographies of Gedolim, of Rabbanim, from 1932 to 1987. Halachic.